Some years ago, I was having a week. My colleague was on vacation, and I was holding down the fort at church. It seems this is exactly when all kinds of extra situations will pop up. And this is exactly what happened. It was already Wednesday, and I hadn't yet started writing my sermon. Yikes. Just a few words about my process. As soon as I know my preaching schedule, I set up a first page for all the sermons coming up. The readings in the top left-hand corner, the other details in the right-hand corner, liturgical day and year, date, church, and my name. I take a quick peek at the lessons of the day, and I throw up some title on the page, a title which I very often change. Somehow, this makes me feel like I have a start when I actually start writing the sermon. When I was working full-time, there might be as many as 6 or 7 such pages in my current sermons file. So back to Wednesday morning. As I said, it was a week. Lots on my list, but it was early still, and I was on my way to my computer to begin to write that sermon. Then a parishioner called to say that she had taken her husband to the hospital. Sandra and Bob were deeply loved, long-time members of our community, and close family friends as well. Suddenly, all bets were off. Instead of checking things off my list, there was letting go of expectations and plans. There was sitting and waiting. There was hoping, being disappointed, and hoping still. The days were filled with praying and telling stories, with family members laying aside long-time resentments and finding peace for a bit at least. Days with tears and so much laughter. With Bob, there was always laughter. I once asked our sons, "What makes Bob Summer so funny?" "Timing," they both said in unison. We have talked about this a lot. Humor is highly regarded in the Kuhlman family. "It's his timing," they said. "He has an awesome sense of timing." Late Friday afternoon, Bob's awesome sense of timing and God's perfect timing came together, and Bob entered into new life, gallant and gracious and funny to the end. Friday evening, a group gathered at Bob and Sandra's home to grieve, tell stories, and share bread and wine. At home later that night, I was wound up and couldn't settle, and I was fussing about my sermon for Sunday, which I hadn't even looked at. My husband, Ron, said, "We have to go to bed now, because tomorrow we have to figure out how to live in a world without Bob Summer." So come Saturday morning, I went to my computer and opened the document for Sunday's sermon. The heading was there, and the gospel was the story we heard today. The title I had thrown on the page so casually was there too. It was two words: Holy Interruptions. As Jesus was walking along, he sees Matthew, a tax collector and outcast, and calls him to join him in ministry and does a bit of teaching about why he has come into the world. While he was saying these things, a synagogue leader came, knelt, and asked him to heal his daughter. Jesus got up and followed him. Then suddenly a woman came up and touched the fringe of his cloak. Jesus is walking along. We presume he is on his way to do good things. He may have a schedule, a list, or a sermon to write. Then, interruptions. It's been said that life is a series of interruptions interrupted by interruptions. There are all kinds of interruptions. A flat tire, a computer mishap, a fussy kid, a stomach flu. None of us would choose these. However, there are also interruptions that can be called holy interruptions that bring blessings in their wake. C.S. Lewis said, "We must stop regarding unpleasant or unexpected things as interruptions of real life." The truth is that interruptions are real life, the real life that God sends us day by day. What we call our real life is but a phantom of our imagination. Instead of trying to avoid interruptions, we should ask God for discernment so we will not miss the unseen hand of God as we race through this life. In today's gospel, Jesus is interrupted multiple times. And because of that, Matthew receives forgiveness and new possibilities. The woman who has been ostracized because of her flow of blood receives healing and is given a new identity. Jesus names her daughter. He affirms her and restores her to community. The official's daughter receives resurrection, new life, and her father receives joy and relief. Holy interruptions. Jesus stops, offers his touch, his time, his love, his healing. Sometimes I think these stories about Jesus are hard to hear. Where is my healing, you might ask? What about my child, my spouse, my parent? My friend, is Jesus still available, willing to be interrupted to heal us? These are hard questions. Not only are there no easy answers, there are no answers. Sometimes it seems Jesus is just as available. Many of us can tell a story about healing in our own lives. But sometimes it seems Jesus is just not around in the same way he was in the Gospels. And girls raised from the dead or women cured of 12 years of bleeding are hard to come by. Sometimes we do not get the healing we pray for, that we long for. I remember that day in the hospital with Sandra and Bob when we learned surgery was not an option after all. When we prayed, I remember starting with, "God, you know what we want." Truth be told, it took a while to get to, "Not our will, but yours." We are, I believe, invited to reach out for the fringe of Jesus' cloak, to lay our deepest hopes and yearnings before God, and then to trust that God, source of our being and goal of our longing, who came to all in need of healing. Every one of us will make that final journey to God, as our friend Bob did. Sometimes there is healing just like in the stories. And sometimes the healing may look more like this: to be at peace with those we love or wish we could love better, to put away old wounds and resentments, to say, "I love you, I'm sorry, thank you, forgive me, I forgive you." When we make room for holy interruptions, when we look for God's healing in all its many forms, then we will not miss the unseen hand of God.